Welcome to Ink in Your Veins. I'm your host, Rachel Herron. In this podcast, I talk to authors about the best things they've learned about writing so we can try those things too. I'll keep each episode short so you can get back to writing. Well, hello, writers. Welcome to episode number 416 of Ink in Your Veins. I'm Rachel Herron, and I'm so happy to be here today with Jennifer Lang. And we talk about a bunch of things, including reading out loud. Oh, and we talk about how hard it is to end a book. And she gives two great tips on ending a book that you are not going to want to miss. So please stick around for that. What has been going on around here? Summer is drawing to a close in New Zealand. Interestingly or weirdly, New Zealand celebrates seasons, the turn of the season on the first of the month. So we are now officially in autumn on March 1st, even though the fall equinox or solstice, equinox doesn't happen until the 21st or so. But it's fall and it kind of feels like fall. There's a nip in the air. I smelled the first wood smoke fire this morning, which I absolutely love. But we're still going swimming. I went swimming twice over the weekend. It's cold. The water's getting colder, but I want to keep it going as long as I can, putting my body into the harbor. There will be a time where it will be too cold for me, but I want to, maybe each year I'll try to push that date further and further and bring it up for more forward and more forward as we go into spring. We'll see. We'll see. It's hard to get in real cold water, but it does feel great. And work-wise, all is going well. I've just been working on the Kickstarter for Unstuck. It is no joke, Kickstarter. It, you know, people say it's a full-time job for a long while, a lot longer than you would want it to be. And they're just not kidding. You know, I believe people when they say these things. I believe Monica Leonel. I believe Joanna Penn. And still, I assume I could do it in an afternoon or two, or if there's a hiccup, I'll be able to fix that easily. These things are not easy. They take so much time. And today, when it's all coming together, like the final button, I swear to goodness, for the 10th time, I'm thinking I'm going to push the final button for review and get it through, because at first I was dealing with a payment issue with Stripe. All day today, Kickstarter has been down. I have lost so much information twice because the suddenly can't save. And luckily it's not me. I've been all over Kickstarter looking at other people's updates and they're all down. Kickstarter is just not working. But I'm frustrated. It's a frustrating day, honestly. I just recorded a whole mini episode. And but no, I didn't. It didn't record. I'm going to check. Yes, we are recording this. Didn't record. And I was so smart. I was so smart about these answers. I don't know if I have it in me to re-record today. I'll try to do that tomorrow. I have a bunch of questions that have been stacked up. So if you are a question asker, please know that that is coming. If I don't get to it tomorrow, I will do it next week. I promise. But yeah, to have, it's like writing for a long time and then you look up and the writing is gone and the computer crashes and you lose an hour of work. It's disheartening to try to do it again. So I'm allowing that. I'm allowing the frustration. But all things considered, I'm feeling pretty balanced. I'm writing and resting. I am resting and working out. Oh, I did my first barbell squat of my life. And I will confess there was no weight on the barbell. Is that what it's called? Barbell? It's a bar and you put bells on it. So that's probably what it is. So it was just the bar. But it was a squat. It was behind my neck. It was on my shoulders. And I was doing squats. And I felt very proud of myself because I really want to get strong and have mobility and continue my mobility and continue my strength. It just feels like an important time to really be working on all of that. So I'm doing that and it's really fun. And yeah, that's about all I've got for my update this week. Just working steady as she goes on Unstuck. Kickstarter coming so soon, y'all. If you are not on my email newsletter of encouragement, I plan on sending out a thing I've been thinking about writing recently. It's going to go out soon. I love talking to the writers on that list. It's just writers on this list. RachelHerron.com/write. If you're not on it, please get on it, because there's also a couple of cool things changing and happening very soon that you will want to know about it, including one free thing that I'm going to be offering that I would love to tell you about. So rachelherron.com/write gets you on that list and you will find out about it. All right. Here is our interview. A California transplant in Tel Aviv, Jennifer Lang teaches writing and yoga. She's American by birth, Israeli by choice, and French by marriage. Award-winning Places We Left Behind, a memoir in miniature, is her first book, and Landed, a yogi's memoir in pieces and poses, will follow in October 2024. Her essays have appeared in Under the Sun, Ascent, Hippocampus, and forthcoming in Consequence, among others. A Pushcart Prize and Best American Essays nominee, she earned an MFA from Vermont College of Fine Arts. Please enjoy this interview. Please enjoy your own writing. And why don't you come find me on the internet and tell me about it, because I'd love to hear about it. Happy writing, my friends. Well, I'm so happy to have you on the show. Will you please share your name and pronouns with us?
Jennifer Lang, she, her.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to have you here as you are on this kind of book tour. You're doing quite a lot right now. Before we get into that and what you are talking about on your tour, can you tell us a little bit about your writing process?
Sure. I'm not going to say it's not the healthiest. It's not, I don't recommend it. My writing process is like who I am, which is Virgo, which is anal, which is I basically go one painstaking sentence at a time, and I don't move to the second sentence unless I really like the first.
Oh, so are you one of those, I call them unicorns, that when you're done with a book, well, that's not a unicorn. Many of us are slow. But are you one of those people that when the book is done, it's kind of already revised?
It's in good shape.
Oh, yeah. That must be hard. That does seem like a very Virgo trait, I have to say. Virgo writers.
What do you know of Virgos?
My middle sister is a Virgo, and there are lists of lists and plans of the plans and meticulousness, I would think. Mm. Not that I know a lot about astrology, but does that apply to you?
I think we could use the word like perfectionist and type A and, you know, a lot of other fabulous,
There's this danger for people like you who write who are perfectionists along the way, and then they don't finish their books. But this is what I always say: that process is a process that is beautiful if one is finishing books that you're proud of. So, how did you kind of learn that that was your process? How did you come to this writing process?
I don't think it started that way. I don't remember from years ago. So I did an MFA 2014 to 2016, and I think that. It wasn't then either. It's evolved. I mean, it is an evolution, this whole thing. It is a process. Yeah. It is a journey. It's all of that. And so it's something that I've just noticed in the last few years. And I'm really into the sentence. And I'm really into... So I got into, during the writing of my manuscript, which we'll talk about, you know, it'll come up. I got into Flash nonfiction. Mm. I'm a nonfiction writer. I got into Flash. I got into compressed prose. And it was in that learning about and that practice of that I think this really started and came to the fore. Yeah.
That's beautiful. The compressed prose, you know, Twitter's a dumpster fire and I'm no longer there, but I was on Twitter for long enough that it really taught me a lot about compressing prose for maximum value. Back when it was, you know, 140 characters, I would always let myself write the whole idea and it would be 4,000 characters and I'd get it down to 140. So we really kind of compress down to the sentence level to make them beautiful. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. It's where you realize how every word counts.
Yeah. Yeah. So in your daily process, what does that look like?
So, you know what, Rachel, this is coming up for my first time. I'm actually connecting a dot, which is amazing that it's just coming to me because I've been talking about my book and my process for months now. I'm realizing that when I really first got into writing, 1997, I hopped on board in San Francisco. I was living in Oakland. I hopped on board in this new industry of the World Wide Web and worked for a company called BabyCenter.com. Mm-hmm. And worked for many, many internet providers as a content writer, like never short of work. And from there, I jumped into print. I did the opposite of what most people had come to San Francisco to do. They left the print world of New York and they came to San Francisco for this new technology. But when I jumped
Yeah.
into print, I started with Parenting Magazine while I was young and raising kids and having babies. And my assignments, I'm just realizing now, were 200 and 300 words. And so I learned from the very beginning how to write short.
Yeah. And
Wow,
how
I can't believe I never
everything
connected that
counted.
dot. Yeah,
And look at where you are now. Like that was your
like
training
a full
ground.
circle.
And that's, yeah, that's beautiful. I love
Yeah,
that.
first little light bulb. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot your question.
What does the process look like on a daily basis?
I would say most days, so I'm a gym rat. I used to say I would go to the yoga studio and I'm a yogi, but now I'm going to say I'm a gym rat. In my late 50s, I realized that a lot is important and not just yoga. I need more than that. I go to the gym 3 to 4 times a week. It's a 15-minute walk to the gym. I do a 45-minute class. I don't do weights. Well, I do weights in a class, but I don't do machine. I don't do swim, but I do a class. And then I walk 15 minutes home. And I think exercise is like, I'm from Northern California. Like, exercise is part of my workday. It's what gets it empty and then ready. It's what primes this space to like then be able to sit and to, you know.
So you always do that before you write.
I try to before I sit at my desk. I would say I don't know where I read this. I have a cup of Earl Grey tea with milk that comes with me to my desk, a ritual thing, at least
Love
one cup.
that.
Like I'll probably have a second cup. Yeah, the black tea with milk, but Earl Grey with bergamot. I take walks. I like to walk. So I think movement is the first piece of it.
That's beautiful. I'm only getting back into that now recently, adding some weight stuff, weight training to my swimming and my hiking. And it feels good for the brain. It feels best for the brain. I keep pulling certain muscles, like just because it's been so long since I've done it. And I was asking my wife the other day, I said, do you think this is maybe a symptom of COVID? And she's like, no, it's a symptom that you're 51.
I was going to say age.
It's just
Yeah.
age,
After we just swapped
you
our
big
ages here, I think
dummy.
it's age. Yeah.
Exactly. So, besides the movement, what things help you most to write?
Quiet.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Well, and I work in open space in my home. So when there's chaos, when a daughter comes in, when the husband comes out of his closed door, when a worker arrives to fix something, you know, like the quiet is often broken. And then I can sometimes be in a zone where it's like all this chaos can be going on and I'm just kind of blocking out. I don't know if that answers the question, but it's me trying to just be in my head. I'm very much a creature of routine. So I work from home at my desk. I'm not sitting in a cafe. There's so many. I live in Tel Aviv. There are tons of places I could take my computer and go work. I can't. I need to be home.
Any tools that help you with that quiet? Do you wear noise canceling headphones, or are you a music kind of person, or is it just air, the sound of air? Sound of air.
I like that.
I do too. What is the most exciting thing you've ever realized about your writing process?
I like to talk about this. The most exciting thing is what I did. Oh, I didn't bring it to the desk. Wow. What I did in my book, Places We
Tell
Left
me.
Behind. Yeah. I played. In the nth hour, in the ninth hour of submitting the manuscript, I noticed in the submission guidelines open to experimental prose. And I was like, ooh.
Ooh.
I have no idea how many times I'd seen it and not read it, right? So before I noticed it, I wouldn't be able to tell you how many publishers say that. And I was like, oh wow! At one point, it caught my eye, like in the middle of the submission process, it caught my eye, and I realized that I had had a chat. I'd written and had an early reader of an earlier iteration of the manuscript say to me, "I wish I could see the pro-con list. Should you move in with your boyfriend or not?" And I was like, well, I could
Ooh.
recreate the pro con list 30 something years later. It was
Yeah.
still fresh in my mind. And so I recreated a pro con list and it started there. So I do lots of things. I've been told that poets do some of these things where I space things around on the page. I'm not a poet, so I can't talk about that. But I do all kinds of creative, unique things to my prose. I call it unconventional to mirror the content, to enhance the content, to avoid repetition, which is a huge pet peeve of mine in writing and reading. In being a writer, I'm sorry, in being a reader, I can't stand an amazing novel where the author repeats the information and doesn't give the reader credit to remember.
Right.
I
Me
like I can put a book
too.
down. And I'm finding it more and more, actually,
Yeah.
an overwritten book because the information just keeps coming and coming and coming.
For me, that always feels like, and I talk about this with my students, it feels like that writer is not trusting me to be as smart as they are. And I need to be trusted to be that way. And if I miss it because I'm being careless, that's on me. It's not on the writer to, oh, what if they weren't paying attention? I'm going to tell them again. We don't need to do that. And it feels good as a reader to have that trust to say, oh, I think she mentioned that 20 pages ago, and this is where it links. And we feel good. It's asking the reader to do the job. Yeah. Oh.
So I'm finding, I find when someone is repetitive with that information that it's like it becomes kind of, it takes the writing to a lower level of, right? What am I trying to say? It
Yeah,
just
yeah,
dumbs it down. It dumbs me down. It dumbs it
yeah.
down. So I do. So for example, I have a chapter. Somebody called it chapterettes. I'm in little chapters, 1 and 2 pages. So somebody reading it said it was chapterettes. I'm like,
Yeah.
oh, I
That's a
like that.
great term, and I love seeing that in books. I love the little chapterettes. That's perfect for it.
So one of my chapterettes is called coordinates, and I use geographic coordinates to show the information that I don't want to repeat, which is my husband and I. So my book is called Places We Left Behind, a memoir in miniature. It's a love story with a lot of conflict about home. And I didn't want to repeat X number of pages later the same information. I wanted to
Yeah.
stay at New York and he wanted to move to Israel. So I
Yeah.
used the coordinates. And you don't know the coordinates, but you understand the coordinates.
I have to say one of my favorite things to do when reading a book is coming up with something, finding something that I then must Google. I love rolling and Googling. I would put the coordinates into Google Maps just to double check. I know
And you're not a
where you
Virgo?
probably meet.
And you're not a Virgo?
I have Virgo tendencies. I can't remember where all those other things are, but there's Virgo in there somewhere. That's
I like
funny.
that.
So,
I think I kind of probably do that too.
yeah. So, but you're really play. You're finding the play in that, and I love that. So that's the fun part. Yeah,
Somebody asked me what was the hard part of writing a book. I'm like, it was fun.
that's the hard part, is that it is fun.
No, I'm just saying it wasn't hard. It was fun. I found the fun. I
Oh,
made it playful. So yeah,
that is
that's
the. That's
funny.
the best answer. So I don't know what your answer will be to this next question then. What part of writing do you struggle with most?
Oh, endings.
No hesitation at all.
That's a no-brainer.
Okay, that is not a common answer. Tell me more about that.
I struggle with like when to how not so much when as much as how to get out, how to not sum it up with a neat bow, which was something I did for decades, not to I struggle with anything.
Any tips on how you have found your way out of that? Any?
So at different points of this manuscript, I hired two different developmental editors. And one of them helped me hugely. And she said, try to land on an image or end with a line of dialogue. And those both helped me a lot.
Oh, those are great specific tips. And they're tips that I see all the time in books, and they are books that are resonant and leave you feeling, oh, yes, there it is. That's great. Speaking of tips, can you share a craft tip of any sort with us?
I think this one is probably one of my favorites, which is I never send anything out until I have read it out loud.
Yeah.
So reading out loud helps me with two things. It helps me catch repetition, which I can't stand, and just a word that I've used it three times in 750 words, and I should have used it once. And it helps me here. So something I love and learned in grad school is like making sure I've carried my themes through. So if I read it out loud, it makes me sure that I've done that I haven't missed carrying it through.
And what point during the drafting phase do you do the reading aloud? I always like to hear that.
Towards the end. For me, it's towards the end.
Right. I just did an audiobook for my next release, and I love doing the audiobook because it's the most perfect last little polish. Like, you think you know what these sentences should sound like until you read them out loud. And if I wasn't doing the audiobook, I don't like reading aloud. I always kind of put it off, and oh, now it's too late. But it is
Why don't you like it?
so helpful. I am impatient. I move too quickly, and I feel like, oh, I'll just read it carefully, and that'll be faster than reading it out loud. But reading it out
I think
loud,
it's different.
it's very different.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
me, it's different. Yeah.
And what about a mindset tip? What kind of mindset tip would you give our
Hands
listeners?
down, the little engine that could. I can.
How do you power that little engine that could?
I mean, it's a big shift for me. I don't, X years ago, I wasn't that confident. I didn't think that. I always had to have a buddy who read my work first before I submitted. Like, there has been a shift. So I think it's just practice and just believing in yourself, which I didn't. And I was really dependent on other people to read my work. And I still do love to share and make sure that, but I don't have to anymore. I mean, sometimes I do, but in general, I think I have more confidence to say, okay, I can do this. And I
I
think
can
it
do
just
this.
comes with time.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and just and show up, do a
Age,
little bit more work.
almost
Yeah.
60,
Yeah. Maturity and confidence. Oh, those are really great things about getting older, I find. Speaking of awesome things like that, what is the kindest thing that you've ever done for yourself as a writer?
I think it's put away something that's frustrating. So let me just use the word manuscript. Put it away for a while, like a long while. I mean, like a month at a time while. Again, something I didn't used to do, didn't understand, heard it from some mentors at grad school, used to roll my eyes at it. Now it's like, I totally get it. And then in that putting away, either you're starting something completely new at the desk with the in the in the cra in the field of writing, or something I've done over the years, take a class, either writing or other. So a year ago, January, I signed up for an 8-week mindfulness class. I was curious. I mean, I'm a yogi, I'm a yoga instructor, all that, but like, I didn't know 100% what mindfulness meant, really. I've never studied it per se. And I did this 8-week thing that, kind of rocked my world at the time. I can't say to you that I practice it on a daily basis, but I can say to you, I learned something and I think about it still. And I think that's helpful in this other thing that I do, the writing.
How do you bring that mindfulness that you've learned from the class or from being a yogi into your writing? How do you think they talk to each other?
So the thing, the biggest takeaway for me with the mindfulness was the first night when she defined it, and she defined it as coming to something without judgment. And I was like, I kind of got little shivers. Like, I am one of, I think we all struggle. Many of us struggle with this. I'm so judgmental with
It's
age. It's getting.
my number one default mode. It's something I am constantly working on. Like, please help me approach this with no judgment, with zero, with neutrality. Perfect neutrality is what I'm seeking. Yeah.
And it's right. And so I think that that word is probably what is what I'm working on the most. And so it's in my writing. It's me at the page trying to bring that into that practice.
That is
That makes sense.
beautiful. That makes perfect sense. And then going back to the kindness of allowing yourself to put something away, like a manuscript for a little while, to go do something else and to learn. That's one of those things that is so hard for people to do because we tend to panic. Like, no, I've got to, it's not working. I must fix it. But sometimes our work needs that time out and being gentle.
Yeah, because you need to empty a little bit and to just let something new in and gives you clarity. I mean, not always, but
There's so much kindness all around that whole idea. Thank you for sharing that with us. Can you share the best book that you've most recently read and why did you love it? Ooh, I love your face. You're already
Wow.
excited to tell us.
First of all, I'm learning that I have a really expressive face. I'm
You
seeing
do.
pictures of
I'm loving
myself
it.
from events, and my eyes are popping, and I'm like, I'm doing crazy stuff.
Me too.
And my hands are all over the
Do
place. So,
babies love you? Babies love me because I'm always like, you know, that
oh, I
you'll notice now.
don't know. I'm just seeing it in pictures, and I'm like, oh shit, I look crazy. So, I just read the most beautiful book. I like historical fiction. I'm a memoir writer who loves a good novel and specifically historical fiction. I just read the most beautiful, beautiful book, and I'm actually going to just look at the name of the author. It's called
Yes.
Orhan's Inheritance by Aline Ohanesian, Ohaneesian.
And will you say the title again?
Orhan, Orhan, apostrophe S, Inheritance.
Inheritance.
It's a debut novel based on
Ooh.
the true stories of the author's grandmother and the survivors of the deportation and ethnic purging of the Armenian population in Turkey, 1915. And it's switching between two time frames. And so, okay, I'm Jewish American, live in Israel. We have some problems going on. And I read this. It's all about the Muslim jihad of the Armenian population 100 and something years ago. And I'm thinking, one, we have a lot in common with the Armenians. And there's an Armenian church about a 25, 30-minute walk from me at the water, at the port of Jaffa. And it's I went up about a year ago into the church. It's beautiful. And there's this Armenian community there. I don't know where they live, but there's in the old city of Jerusalem, there are four quarters. There's the Muslim quarter, the Jewish quarter, the Christian quarter, and the Armenian quarter. So there's Armenian churches and there are Armenian craft stores, and like there's an Armenian population in Israel. And so my first thinking after reading the book was, we have a lot in common, and number one, and number two, we're it's bonding. It's bonding. We're not alone.
Do you think there's ever a novel in you?
But hold on. What I want to say is, and the writing is beautiful. I actually
Ooh.
read a paragraph out loud to my husband, which I don't think I do on a normal basis. Well, there's different narrators, but one of the main, Orhan, he was a photographer, and there's a paragraph about him writing about his Leica camera. And it is sensual. The sentences
That's
are
awesome.
stunning, stunning. So, okay. So, yeah. So, enough of the book. Amazing. Highly recommend if you like historical fiction.
I do, yeah.
And funny, you should ask that question. I also read within the past year a book called The Bohemians by Jasmine Darznik, I think is her name, or Darnik. I think she's an Iranian immigrant to America, to San Francisco. I don't know. I know we had an influx of Iranians in 1979 in California. I don't know if she was a kid and she came then. I don't know. It is the story. It starts in 1918 when the photographer. Oh, it's funny. Both books are
Yeah.
interesting. When the photographer Dorothea Lange came by train from New York to San Francisco. So it starts in San Francisco. Dorothea Lange's, I guess, loose story of her art, her being one of the artists, one of the bohemians in San Francisco in the late teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, and the benefactors who are the street names of San Francisco. So I grew up in the Bay Area. So the street names, Gould and Scott and Green and I don't know, maybe DiPizzaro, I don't know. And I'm reading this book and it was and the Depression, the building of the Golden Gate Bridge, World War II, the Spanish flu, like all of these things in history that just line up one after the other, and the building of San Francisco. And it's just so I was reading that, thinking about my grandfather, my dad's father, who arrived in the early 20s in San Francisco from Russia, escaping the Tsar in the 19 teens, escaping and fleeing anti-Semitism, came directly to San Francisco. He had an older brother there, and he was a peddler. He sold, we call it in Yiddish, shmatas, in what I think we say now is Marin County and Sonoma County, the farmers. And I'm reading The Bohemians thinking this is the story of the artists But I have the Jewish story of San Francisco, the building of San Francisco,
Yes,
post
yes.
gold rush, pre whatever. And so I was like, okay, if I ever want to try my hand at historical fiction, it would be that.
I love the way that you're lighting up when you think about that. So please
Yeah. Well, it's like
keep
in
us
5 to 10
posted.
years.
No hurry, but that is super, super exciting. Okay. May I ask you to tell us a moment that you knew you had ink in your veins?
I think in grad school played a big part of my journey here.
Yeah.
When I was waking up in the middle of the night at home in Israel, between residencies, between trips to the campus in Vermont, with like feverish with essay ideas, like titles coming at me, sentences coming at me, like just lots. And I published a lot in grad school and right after all of these things that had just like awakened me.
Oh,
So
that's
I think I
lovely.
would say that.
It
Yeah.
was you were really feeling it in your body and it was waking you up. That's
Yeah.
amazing. Can you please tell us about your book and what you're talking about right now as you are doing these events?
Again, my book is called Places We Left Behind, a memoir in miniature. Miniature because I'm 5'1", because I was teased mercilessly as a girl for being tiny and a midget and all these words we wouldn't use today because they're not PC. Like dwarf and midget, and really we don't say these words anymore. And it's miniature because I work in chapterettes, tiny chapters in compressed prose. And it's a short story, it's 14,000 words. It's a short book. So I'll be a little bit more explicit. It is a love story with a lot of conflict, inner and personal, marital and geopolitical, about home. It starts in 1989 when I meet my French husband in the hills of Jerusalem, where I'm unexpectedly and not there for long term, but stay because we have a fast falling in love. And it ends in 2011 when we leave America, where we've been living for 16 years, to return to Israel. So I've now been in Israel since 2011, but it's our third time. So we did 5 years, then we left for a year in Paris, then we left for California. We were there for 6 years. Then we moved to New York 6 years. Then we moved to Israel for a year. Then we moved back to New York, and then we moved back to Israel.
That is a
First
lot
with
of
one
moving.
kid, then with three. Yeah. So a real struggle for home. Struggle on the parent level, on the parental unit level.
And you fit so much into that small space. That must have been a challenge.
It was fun.
I love
My
that it was
answer?
fun. Yeah, it's such a great answer. Okay, where can we find the book and where can we find you online?
So the book is on Amazon. The book is at BarnesandNoble.com. It's at bookshop.org. That's a great place, bookshop.org. So it's published by Vine Leaves Press, who is soon going to actually start selling books directly,
Oh, cool.
vineleavespress.com.
Nice.
And I am at Israel Writers Studio, ISRAELWRITERSTUDIO.com. And I have a page for my book, and I have a page for my book that's coming out in October. I have another call.
And what is that one called?
It's called Landed, a Yogi's Memoir in Pieces and Poses. It starts in 2011 after we landed in Israel. I did not intend to write two books. I did not intend. It happened.
Yeah, it does sometimes.
And they came out in order. What do we say? Sequential order. And that's a fluke. That's just a stroke of luck. And that's my story.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for being here. It has been a joy to talk to you.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of Ink in Your Veins. You can reach me at my website, rachelherron.com, and you can also support me at patreon.com/Rachel, RACHAEL, where I have all sorts of great stuff for writers for as little as $1 a month. And do sign up for my free writer's email list of encouragement at rachelherron.com/write. Now, get to writing, my friends.